Yosef HaTzadik in Parshat Vayigash reveals himself to his brothers. The news is told to Paro's house, and we have a source one. Yosef's brothers have come. Paro said to Yosef, "Send your brothers, do this. Load up your animals and go directly to the land of Canaan. Bring your father and your households and come to me. I'll give you the best of the land of Egypt. You'll eat from the fat of the land. And you are commanded to say, do this, take for yourselves the land of Egypt, wagons, for your small children, for your wives, transport your father and come. And let your eyes not take pity on your belongings, for the best of the land of Egypt is yours." And as the Rabbanel notes, this is in source 2, Yosef's integrity and honesty were so impeccable that Paro knew he would never abuse his high office for personal advantage, especially in the case since the export of wagons from Egypt was prohibited. So therefore, Paro is the one who tells him, "I'm commanding you, send wagons to take them." The Chumash goes on, "The sons of Israel did so, and Yosef gave them wagons by Paro's word, and he gave them provisions for the journey. To each of them he gave changes of clothing, but to Binyamin he gave 300 pieces of silver and 5 changes of clothing. And to his father he sent the following, 10 he donkeys, laden with the best of Egypt, and 10 she donkeys, laden with grain, bread, and food for his father to the journey." And then we find they went up from Egypt, and they told their father, Yosef's still alive, he's also the ruler over the land of Egypt. His heart rejected it, he could not believe them. However, when they related to him all the words that Yosef had spoken, and he saw the wagons that Yosef had sent to transport him, then the spirit of their father Yaakov was revived, and Israel said, "How great, my son Yosef still live, I shall go see him before he died." We've spoken about in the past, and many years ago, the idea of this agulos, these wagons that Yaakov Avinu sees, and that revives his spirit. I want to take a look at this topic again from a similar but really different vantage point today, Amir Tzashem, and come up with some very, very powerful lessons for our lives. What is the idea of seeing these wagons that suddenly Yaakov Avinu's spirit is revived? So again, source 2, "To prove to Yaakov that Yosef had sent these messages, Yosef directed his brothers to say the last topic he and Yaakov had studied together was that of the Egla Rufa, the calf whose neck was broken, an expiation of the unsolved murder." If we take a look at Rabelski and Nei Yisrael, the word agalos has a double meaning. It can be the plural of agala, wagon, or it can be the plural of egla, a female calf. In the context of our pasuk, the word agalos could only mean wagons because they were sent less faith also to carry Yaakov Avinu down to Mitzrayim. Although calves were used to pull light carts over short distance and for royalty, a hardier animal would have been necessary for a long journey from Canaan to Mitzrayim. If so, then the play on the word agalos was a sign that Rashi refers to. However, what guarantee do Yosef have that Yaakov would understand the subtle inference, particularly since Yaakov thought that Yosef was dead? More importantly, what's the significance of reminding Yaakov of the parasha of Egla Rufa rather than any other parasha they learned together, even if it was the last parasha? So what is the significance of agalot, which are wagons, which is similar to Egla, which is the calf that's neck is broken? It's like a play on words here. What was it about these wagons that would remind Yaakov Avinu of the last thing that they studied together? What was the significance of this was the last thing that they studied together? And also, it's very problematic because the Chumash specifically says these were the Rav Lef notes in source number 4. These were the wagons that Paro told him to send. So what is it suddenly that it was the wagons that Yosef sent, it was Paro sent, and he brings the Medrash which says that Yehuda burnt the wagons that were sent by Paro because they were bedecked with idolatry? What is that all about? We need to understand who sent the wagons, what's the significance of the wagons, and what lessons we can learn for our lives. Before we begin our study, I'd like to point out a very fundamental idea that Rav Yehuda Leib Chassman in Or Yahel points out. This is in sources 5a and b. We know later in the parsha, Yehuda is sent, that Yehuda shalach, right, he sent down the Horot Lefan of Goshna to be able to set up a Beis Medrash. Indeed, as we'll see at the end of the Shir Yirtz Hashem today, Yehuda and Yosef are really the personalities in the parsha. Vayigash Elav Yehuda. Yehuda comes forward to Yosef. He's the one who's a guarantor for Binyamin. It's Yehuda comes down at the end, first, to meet Yosef. And it's really, as we know, what Yehuda represents being Melech HaMashiach, Yosef, Mashiach ben Davi, Mashiach ben Yosef, meeting. These are probably the two personalities in Yaakov Avinu's family, and we need to see what they represent. So Reb Chassan points out that Yehuda went down, Lahoro Lefanov is clearly to set up a Beis Medrash. How do we know this? He says we know from the fact that what was the sign that Yosef told the brothers that would ensure that Yaakov Avinu would be revived? The last parsha they learned together of Egla Rufa. And Reb Chassan notes, and this is what I think is so fundamental for us. He says, our world, we know, is a prosdor, is a antechamber, litraklin of the future world, which is going to be like the palace, it's going to be the banquet hall. And the challenge is to be able to have our priorities in order. To recognize the antechamber is just the preparation to get into the banquet hall. Our souls are being brought into this world in order to be able to enable us to reach higher levels in the Olam HaNitzchi, in the world of eternity. And what happens to most people, he says, is they are ma'apecha karal piha. They turn it on its head. U'machshiva tafel li'ikar v'ikar itzlo k'tafel. They make that which is important secondary, and that which is secondary important. And we know what happens is, even those who are ma'imim b'taras Hashem and are involved in yiras shamayim, they forget their priorities. And they spend their whole day, 24-7, working on making sure kol ma'asav and the arrow in 5a, u'machshvotam mechuvanim l'inyana b'olam ha'shafel. Their entire day is spent on their physical world, on their health, on their parnasa, on their sustenance, making sure they have a comfortable place to live, the luxuries of this world. And in order, obviously, because they realize that they're from Jews, and they have to daven and say brachos, so he calls it kishutim ruchaniim in the squiggly. They add, like, you know, beautiful, bedecked by beautiful spiritual things on top of their focus. It's almost like the icing on the cake, but not the cake itself. As Rav Dessler speaks about it, he says, could you imagine somebody who's building a building, and they take the scaffolding that's used to be able to reach, you know, different parts of the house, and they overlay the scaffolding with gold and fine stone. You would laugh at them. My gosh, what a waste. Right? Waste of money, waste of effort, waste of everything. Because the scaffolding is only in order to be able to build a beautiful house. Likewise, the scaffolding is our world. Where are our priorities? What is our focus? How do we view this world? Do we view this as the be-end and, you know, of all? Or do we view this as a hechitimsi, a medium to a higher world? Do we view our physical possessions, as we spoke about in the Chanukah Shir, as a medium to be able to elevate it to a higher purpose, a higher goal? And now I appreciate, he says, that if you want to know one litmus test of what's important for a person, ask them to recount, to recall what they, you know, what they just experienced over their lifetime. What were the highlights of their life? And when they talk, what they talk about as the highlights of their life is a reflection of what's really important to them. Yaakov Avinu sees that when Yosef HaTzadik is trying to mention what happened to him in the past, he's been gone for so many years, what is the thing that he wants to relay over to his father? What's the most important things of those 22 years? It was the fact the last thing they learned together was the law of Egla Rufa. That's their focus. Hence, Yehuda's being sent, Lahara Lefana. That was the house of Yaakov Avinu. Their focus was Torah and Avodas Hashem. You know, my friends, we could try this test ourselves, where, you know, Hanukkah just was, or, you know, a few days ago, and you ask yourself, or you ask your kids, what was your highlight? Well, maybe it's not fair to do it to your kids. Ask your spouse, ask your friends, what was your highlight of Hanukkah? So if they say a Hanukkah party or the Hanukkah gift I got, you see where you're holding. If you say, wow, sitting by the Neiros, sitting by the candles, and being able to daven it, so you know where they're holding. And what is your value is what you recall, what you are going to take away from the experience. It's so fascinating that if you take a look at the Svarim HaKadoshim on this inyan, and I've never really seen this before, over and over, I mean over and over again, they repeat over that famous Maisa that happened in the times of the Gerut. A very famous Maisa. I'm going to repeat it over just because everyone else does. So I understand that it needs to be repeated. The story of a woman who gets married and the husband disappears during the week of Sheva Brachot. And he's gone for years. She's an Aguna. She can't get remarried. Many, 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 many years later, a man comes and says, "I am your husband who disappeared." And he says, "Ask me any questions you want." And she asks some questions, and he seems to know the answers. She only knew him for a few days, but yet something said to her, "This is an imposter, this is not her husband." But you go put her finger on it. And he knew, like, even intimate details. And she didn't know what to do. Like, to marry him would be, you know, if he wasn't her husband, it's sister of Eshadish. Like, it's a problem here. So, they go to the Gra, they go to the Vilna Gaon. And the Gra says, "Take this fellow to the Shul and ask him to show you, you know, the people, where his makom kavua was, where his place where he used to daven." They bring him into the shul, looks around, and he's totally confused. He doesn't know. And he admits he's an imposter whom God met the husband, got as much information that he thought would be asked of him. He never dreamed that this would be a question asked. This is the focus. This is the question of what our focus is. You want to know where a person's whole thing? See where they daven in shul. See what's important to them. See where their spirituality is. Because that's the essence of our lives. And Motzei Chanukah, as we walk out of Chanukah, this has to be one of the lessons that we learn. That Chanukah is Arachti Ner L'Mashiachai. It's a preparation for the future. And it's a preparation for Yemos HaMashiach. And a preparation for our own lives. For what comes beyond this world. And that's what's left is that Ner, is that candles, the Nishmas Elokim, the candle of God. That's what's going to be left. And how are we investing in that candle? How are we investing in our spirituality? Do we have our priorities in check? That's the question that we need to ask ourselves. So, on the most basic background, painting the background picture, what was it that revived Yaakov Avinu when he heard about the law of Egla Rufa? He says that Yosef HaTzadik hasn't lost his priorities. He may be in the land of Egypt, the land of plenty, but what his focus is still Torah. I know Yosef HaTzadik is alive. However, the question still begs itself. What is it about these wagons that Yaakov Avinu knew that and understood the hint that Yosef HaTzadik was trying to give to him, and he knew that Yosef was alive? And I'd like to look at this on a number of levels. There's a lot. And we're not going to cover all of them, obviously. And I want to look at it first from the wagons themselves. What was the message that Yosef HaTzadik was trying to give over? And then just step back and not look at it specifically in connection to the mitzvah of Egla Arufa, but to look at it a little bit more broadly, what was the message that Yaakov Avinu was trying, Yosef HaTzadik was trying to send his father, Yaakov Avinu, in the sending of these wagons. So let's begin. The first approach we'll make mention of is the Nesivos Chaim in source number 6, where he mentions the idea that Ule'aniyas Daiti and the arrow, Nira Lefarish, Dinei Kasheh, Im Shachol Yaakov Agalo B'chdei Lorid Et Mishpachto L'Mitzrayim, Im Kein, Lama Tanu Et HaChamarim U'Atanot Mazon U'Mitul Mitzrayim. If we're sending wagons to bring Yaakov Avinu and his family down, so then why did Yosef HaTzadik, and specifically, we've looked at that pasuk, laid in the camels, the donkeys, with the food? Would it not have made more sense that why should these poor animals schlep this food? Just put it on the wagons. Shalom Yisrael. Finished. El Shazoi Asiman Shemasar Yosef. No, that was the exact sign. Because by Egla Rufa it says, Asher lo uvadba shalom mashchaba'ol. You took a calf that was not ever worked. V'haynu shloi tam shumesh haklal. It wasn't used for anything. So by taking a wagon that is empty, without anything on it, and putting all the stuff on the hinge donkeys, etc., you then saw that Yaakov Avinu understood that this was the hint that Yosef HaTzadik was saying. He told the brothers, "Tell my father, the last thing we learned was Egla Rufa." And then when he saw the wagons, and he saw that the wagons were empty, And it was the donkeys that were carrying all the things. He understood that this was a hint that Yaakov Avinu was supposed to understand, that Yosef HaTzadik remember what they learned, and it was wagons. It was a hint to the Eglah, the calf, that did not have any burdens. Likewise, this wagon did not carry any burdens, and that was a hint that Yaakov Avinu understood. That's one way of looking at the connection between the two, and Yaakov Avinu understanding the message that Yosef HaTzadik was trying to send. Second idea is Rav Belsky in Israel. The Mishnah teaches us, source 7, more about the mitzvah of Egel Rufa. After killing the calf and a barren raven, the elders of the city washed their hands in water over the site where the calf was slaughtered and said, our hands have not shed this blood and our eyes have never seen him, right? Again, the Egel Rufa is a story of a man who's found murdered and no one knows who killed him, so the elders of the nearest town have to take this calf, break its neck, and make this statement. Would it enter our minds to think that the sages of the Beit Din are murderers? Rather, they said, he never came into our care, only to be sent off with that food. We never saw him, only to leave him without an escort. So obviously the elders are saying, we don't take responsibility. We did everything we could. This man must not have come from our place. The elders of Beit Din are not personally responsible for providing travelers with food and escort. But it is a responsibility to educate the members of the community, to care for the needs of the poor, residents, and wayfarers alike. If a traveler does not receive the minimum of care, this shows that the elders of the city were negligent in their responsibilities. Thus, if a traveler should be found dead in the proximity to their town, the elders are deemed accomplices to a murder, and they must bring as an atonement the Egla Rufa. The Gemara stipulates that certain things must be provided to a poor wayfarer. When a traveler enters a town, he is entitled to a bed, a blanket, and a pillow. The city also provides him with two meals. One he eats for supper, and the other he carries with him to the next town. And when he leaves, he should be escorted a distance of 4 amos. If these things are provided, then it's understood the traveler will come to no harm. Now, notes from Belsky, continuing. Most of these halachas are self-evident. Hungry and weary traveler needs board and room. But why is it that there's an obligation to symbolically escort the traveler a few paces to the city? And he's out of the city. And he says, most travelers in those days were done on foot. It was a lonely and sometimes dangerous endeavor. Bandits roamed the highways. One could get lost and perhaps starve to death. A person could set on a trip and never be heard from again. Perhaps more than the actual danger, the lone traveler felt vulnerable. The potential dangers were numerous. Now we can explain the need to give away for a meal for the journey. Chazal said, one who has a paspet silo, bread in his basket, cannot be compared to one who does not have it. If a traveler carries some food with him, he has two distinct advantages. First, the fact he possesses the meal gives him the confidence to travel without fear of starvation. Additionally, listen to this, the meal will serve as a tangible reminder that there are people who care about him. The confidence and reassurance that the townspeople provided him when they gave him the extra meal and the escort can mean the difference between life and death. And this is the idea. That the Parsha of Egla Rufa teaches us that a Jew must not only make efforts to nourish the body of a fellow Jew, he must also nourish his soul. When it comes to a human being, part and parcel of the care he receives is the sense that he's a respectable person whose feelings, as well as his physical survival, are important and worthy of being attended to by the leaders of the city. And this is what makes us special. We're Baishanim, Rachmanim, Gomli Chasadim. This is bashful, merciful performers of kindness. This is the quality of that sets us apart. You know, Rabbi Fran developing this idea that when you escort a person out and give a meal to a person, it's not just a physical aspect. It's very much a psychological aspect as well. And he notes, I think it's because as important as to have food and drink, escorting a person provides a basic psychological need shared by every human being. Thirst for dignity. Dignity is water to the soul. Every person needs to feel that he's appreciated, that people take him seriously, that he is needed. A guest can be accorded a private suit with a jacuzzi, a fruit basket on the dresser, but if he's treated with condescension by his host, all the material comforts are worth very little. Another guest can be offered a simple bed in a house in which he must share the facilities with a host family. But if the host shows the guest that he wants to spend time with him, he provides his guest with a sense of self-worth. That is the greatest hospitality that can be shown. Perhaps the most obvious way to show a guest that his visit is appreciated and you want to spend time with him is to escort him on his way, to show him that it's hard for you to part from him. The dignity he feels after receiving that message will accompany him long after you've parted ways. And that dignity might be what gives the traveler the wherewithal to defend himself should he be assaulted by a bandit, a sense of self-worth, of having people care about him, and will make him want to continue living and help fight for his life. And he says, perhaps, knows from a friend, that this was a message that Yosef Tzaddik was giving to Yaakov Avinu. I have survived, and I survived spiritually, because you have given me that message of my own self-worth, and I felt that I was escorted by you throughout my entire sojourn in Egypt, and therefore, as we've spoken about in Parshat Vayeshev, Yaakov Avinu's presence is what saved Yosef HaTzadik from sin. So the mitzvah of Levaya, the mitzvah of escorting a person, which is connected to the root of the mitzvah of the Egla Arufa, it's not just that I've escorted a person physically for Amos, it's the feeling that I've given this person. I care about you. I'm with you. I think about you. Your worth is important to me. So when we're talking about the Egla Arufa, it's not just to give them the food. It's to give them the feeling behind the food. It's to give them the feeling of, I care about you. You mean something to me. With this, we can come back to the Ene Yisrael. This difference is exactly what made the wagons from Mitzrayim, Yosef's, and not Paro. Listen closely. Paro commanded Yosef to say to his brothers, take for yourself from the land of Mitzrayim wagons for your children, and your eyes should not be concerned over the furnishings, for the best of the land of Israel shall, Egypt shall be yours. The wagons Paro instructed Yosef to send were empty, meant simply to bring Yaakov Avinu and his family to Mitzrayim. However, Yosef was not satisfied with this arrangement. He knew that Yaakov had a terribly arduous journey ahead of him. Therefore, Yosef did more than he was instructed. He provided his father and his brothers with seder l'derech, provisions for the journey. And Yosef gave them wagons according to Paro's word, and he gave them provisions for his journey. And he gave them the best of Mitzrayim, 10 she donkeys carrying grain and bread, etc. Yosef took care that Yaakov Avinu would travel with the confidence of pas besilo, of food in his basket. Indeed, Yosef's wagons were filled with much more than food and delicacies. They carried all of this love and concern for Yaakov Avinu, so something even a generous king like Paro would not have thought of doing. It simply would not have the practice. It simply was not the practice. As Yosef knew, it would be clear to his father that these wagons were sent by a caring, dedicated Jew. And that is why, when Yaakov Avinu saw the loaded wagons, that was the sign. It wasn't just they saw a wagon, Egla and Agala, you know, sound the same. When he saw the wagons laden with food, or the she-donkeys connected with the wagons laden with food, he understood that Yosef HaTzadik not only remembered what he had learned, but he was practicing what he had learned. He remained a dedicated Jew. He was living according to the lessons, despite the evil atmosphere of Mitzrayim. And that is what revived Yaakov Avinu. It's not just enough, and this is a lesson for our lives. It's not just enough to be able to care for a guest when they come to our homes. What Yaakov Avinu had taught Yosef HaTzadik, and the lesson Yosef HaTzadik is teaching us, is that when we send a person away, we have to send them with a way of, I'm so happy you came, I'm so sorry to see you go, A. And B, send them with food. Send them again, depending where he's going. I guess in today's day and age, you'd also send him with the, waves or something along that line. Make sure he doesn't get lost, and I make sure you have the directions. And food. That you have something to eat. Oh, I'm okay. You might be okay. But I still have the obligation to give you some seder l'derech. And without even asking, you pack up some fruit, some nuts, whatever it is. Even though you might think you're nuts. So just pack it up and say, here, I gave you a little something to take along with you on the way. It's not just about the food, whether they have food to eat or not. They may have a car full of food. That's not the point. The point is, somebody cares about you. That's what the food represents. It's connection. It's love. It's a feeling of identity. on this level, where Yaakov Avinu understands that Yosef HaTzadik is living the Egla Rufa, we can appreciate the idea that the Birkas Mordechai Rav Ezrachi points out of what the whole idea, the underpinnings of the whole mitzvah of Egla Rufa, of Levaya, of making sure you escort a person who is on the way. And he says that is one word in 17, that word is Achrayus, is responsibility. And that's what, and it's a very fascinating idea, he says the whole idea that the elders of the city are, you know, told to go through this whole experience is to remind the elders of the city, you know, you have an achrayus, a responsibility, to make sure that your city is functioning in a way that people are doing hachnasat orchim, they're bringing in the guests the way they should. As well as, and this is the chiddush, that the elders of the city achrayus, responsibility, is not just on the people to take care of the wafers that they are going to be treated in the appropriate way. But notes Rav Ezrachi, about the Parsha of Egla Arufa, in the asterisk, Balu Amed, ki nimsa rotseach mitzvot ha'ir, haroshei ota ir achraim hema lekach, that the elders are also responsible for the murderers. Have they done everything they can to be able to make sure that the people are taken care of, that the kids who lo aleinu, who may be going off the derech, are you working with them? Are you stopping them from the downward slide that they shouldn't, God forbid, people who will go out to steal or to do terrible things to other people in order to get the food and basic necessities? Is everyone being taken care of? And this is the Gevaldik idea of Achrayus. It's not just that I take care of the visitors, but I have to take care of the people in my city, that they are being taken care of as well. That they have, that the people don't fall into a slippery slope, that they become murderers. That's also responsibility of the elders of the city. You know, this week I met with a student. A common question I ask my students is, have any plans for the future, what you want to do? So this was a first. There's always a first. This one was one of them. She said she wants to work as a social worker in prisons to try to rehabilitate prisoners. Okay? I was asking her, like, you sure you want to be around this environment as a mother, as a wife? You know, criminals are pretty hardcore fellows. So she says to me, and I'm not going to mention what city she's from. That I'm not. So she comes from a small city, a small town, could be anywhere in America, where she sees all the time people getting arrested. And she feels for these kids. And she realizes that they're really good kids, a lot of oftentimes teenagers, who just have fallen in the wrong crowd. And she feels for them. And she wants to be able to help them and rehabilitate them. So I asked her, I said, did you ever think about working with teens at risk so they don't fall into that level? She said, a lot of people are working with them. But once they've fallen, let's help those out to get back on their feet. There's achrayus, there's responsibility. We'll see where she lands in life. But there is that aspect of personal responsibility. And he notes here, Rav Ezrachi, and I think it's very, very fascinating. He says, this personal responsibility is not just of the elders. It's for all of us to recognize that we are walking models of personal responsibility. And the example that he gives is, let's say, a person, gives an example in a Beis Medrash, but it could be anywhere. In a Beis Medrash, let's say a chash of a person doesn't show up or comes late. So they'll say, you know, I have my reasons, this and that, or continuously late. You know, what difference does it make? But he said, maybe some young boy is watching this person and says, if this rabbi or this chash of a person can come in late or walk out early, so then why can't I? People watch us. You know, if we start talking in shul, then younger people say, well, look, this older person's talking in shul, it must be okay to talk. We have to realize that the sense of responsibility, the sense of achrayus, is not just on the elders, it's on each and every one of us, that we live up to the obligations of being a person who people are going to look to for modeling. And we have to be able to live accordingly. So, my friends, what we've seen so far. One is, what was the hint at the Egla Rufa Agula? The fact that there was nothing on the wagons, it was empty, to remind Yaakov Avinu, I remember the halacha, that the Egla, that the calf, would never pulled a yoke. Two, it wasn't the Agula itself, the wagon, it was what came with the wagon, that Yaakov Avinu understood that Yosef HaTzadik was living the method, that he gave him so much food. Paro, and that's the difference between Paro's wagon and Yosef's wagon. Paro, yes, sent wagons, but they were empty wagons. Yosef sent wagons laden with food above and beyond. Because, right, Paro's just basic provisions. Yosef is above and beyond to say, Abba, I remember Egla Rufa. Now that I remember Egla Rufa, I remember the message. Care about a person, sensitivity to a person, build a person. That's our achrayos, that's our responsibility, and that's a responsibility we all have, not only to our guests, but to everyone whom we meet. Third approach of the four. Rabbi Leff and Outlooks and Insights. Paro told Yosef, and now I command you, source 18, to do the following. Take for yourselves from the land of Egypt wagons for you and your wives, and transport your father and come here. And do not be concerned about your possessions, for the best of the land of Egypt shall be yours. What was Paro really saying? He was saying is, come down to Egypt, and you will assimilate and become part and parcel of everybody else. You don't have to worry about bringing your wardrobe or furniture, because you know what? We'll give you the best of the furnishings of Egypt. Yosef, however, knew that if his plan were conveyed to Yaakov, he would never descend to Egypt. On the contrary, Yaakov would need assurances that every precaution was being taken to combat the possibility of assimilation. Thus, Yosef sent wagons according to the word of Paro, and not exactly according to the command of Paro, but according to Paro's intentions of enticing Yaakov to Egypt. Yosef added wagons for their possessions so they could recreate totally the environment of Eretz Yisrael in Egypt and remain insulated from Egyptian society and culture. Thus, Yaakov's family went down to Egypt with all their livestock, all their possessions, which they acquired in the land of Egypt. When Yaakov saw the wagons that Paro had sent and was informed of the extra wagons that Yosef added for their possessions, it revived his spirit. He recognized that Yosef understood the importance of guarding against possible assimilation and the need to remain insulated from the Egyptian culture. What does this have to do with Egla Rufa? Why was this a reminder of the last mitzvah they learned together? So both the Das Kanim Valley Tosfos and Maral explained that when Yaakov sent Yosef to check on his brothers, he bid him farewell and began to escort him as halacha states. Yosef, a boy of 17, begged his father, then 108 years old, not to accompany him down the steep hill from Hebron, which was necessitating a difficult climb back up. Yaakov replied that levaya of escorting people on journey is of great importance. We learn the importance of levaya from the mitzvah of Egla Rufa. As part of the mitzvah of Egla Rufa, the elders of the city proclaimed they did not shed his blood, which means, as we saw, they did not fail in escorting this person. Now listen to the Maral here in 19. The Maral explains that Shari Derech develops this at length, didn't have room for it, but listen. The Maral explains that although one is halachically required to accompany his friend no more than four amos, even that levaya suffices to show, which is around 8 feet, that one being accompanied, that he is not alone, but is connected to others. Here's the key, says Maral. This spiritual connection gives the one accompanied the merit of the tzibur, of the group, of the public, which is a potent protection against harm. The mitzvah levaya shows us that a person's physical location is not as significant as the spiritual locus to which he is attached. One can be physically alone, yet spiritually connected to the body of Klal Yisrael through his connection to the one who escorts him on the beginning of his journey. Similarly, one may physically be in Golos, far from Eretz Yisrael, but spiritually connected to it. Yaakov's realization that Yosef still lived in accord with this concept caused his spirit to revive. Now we understand, my friends, that What was the whole ability, and this is the end of the parasha, for Yosef and his family to be able to live is Yosef set up for them Eretz Goshen. And listen to this. When Yosef told his brothers in 28 that he was going to inform Paro, he says, my brothers and my father's household who are in the land of Canaan have come to me. Hinting to them, they were not from the land of Canaan, but still in the land of Canaan, despite temporarily residing in Egypt. And that's why Yehuda set up a Beis Medrash before coming there. And now we understand it was Yehuda who exercised his royal power by bringing the extra wagons back to Yaakov for all their possessions. He thereby nullified Paro's purpose of promoting Yaakov's assimilation. When Chazal say Yehuda burned the Avodah Zarah of Paro's wagons, they mean that he destroyed them by negating their intended function. And Chazal teach us, this is 20b, that the study halls and shuls and gullus are parts of Eretz Israel transplanted to foreign soil. It is in them and around them that we must build a temporary physical dwelling place that is spiritually rooted in the holiness and purity of Eretz Yisrael. As long as one is physically prevented from being in Eretz Yisrael, he must transplant Eretz Yisrael to foreign soil. And this way, the Jew insulates himself from assimilating into the whole society and culture. And I'll tell you, my friends, there are quite a number of times that on my travels to Chutz Laaretz, I walk into somebody's house and I say, this is the feeling of Eretz Yisrael. You feel it? The kedusha of the home, the focus of the home, the svarim in the home, the way the home speaks. It's an Eretz Yisrael environment, and that's what we have to understand, and that was the message. The idea of the agolos and the eglos, what are all this about? The whole idea of the egla rufa is that you are not alone. That albeit you're walking by yourself, but when people escort you, you've now been connected to the tzibur, to the group, the whole, and now you have a higher level of protection. You have the protection of the group, not only the protection of the individual. The protection of the individual may depend on whether you're worthy or not, but the protection of the whole is a guaranteed protection. So albeit he's not with the group, the protection spiritually of the group is with that person. Likewise, a person may not physically be in Eretz Yisrael, but the mindset, the psychology, the spirituality of Eretz Yisrael can be carried with him, just like a group can be carried with an individual. And that's a challenge that those living in Eretz Yisrael obviously have, to make sure Eretz Yisrael is an Eretz Yisrael, that's for sure. And likewise, those who are not in Eretz Yisrael, or not yet in Eretz Yisrael, we should say, should be able to be live that life where you feel that protection, that spirituality, that bubble, so to speak, that you walk in and you feel you're in an environment of Eretz Yisrael. Okay, my friends, we've learned a tremendous amount. The connection between the agolos and the eglos are the subtle lessons that Yaakov Avinu was being taught by Yosef, that he remembered what he learned. Don't have any burden on it. He remembered that it's not just about the physical accompaniment, it's about the emotional. Send the food with him. It's about the achrayus, the responsibility, as well as how the individual is connected to a larger group, a larger sphere, a larger spiritual sphere. Don't worry. Paro wants you to come down and assimilate. I am going to ensure that you are going to be separate. When Yaakov Avinu understood that Yosef understood what it means to transplant Eretz Yisrael in Egypt, then he was prepared to go down, albeit with Hashem's reassurance that everything would be fine. I'd like to take a look at one last idea, which looks at the agolos, the wagons, not connected to the egla rufa, but wagons as wagons. And the wagons themselves was a message to Yaakov Avinu. And I'd like to look at a gewaltic insight of the Kedushas Levi that Rav Pinchas Friedman and Shuli Pinchas develops, and then take this idea, which is very deep and very powerful, one step deeper, if we can do such a thing, with the Mitzameach Zion, and then end with a gewaltic piece from Shuli Pinchas. So, my friends, hold on tight for the end part of this year. The Zohar notes that the wagons that Joseph sent, source 22, are wagons from the side of the wagons from the side of holiness, and their wagons from the side of impurity. The wagons of the side of holiness are the wagons that Joseph sent. The wagons of the side of impurity were the wagons that Paro sent. What's going on here? So he quotes here an idea in 23 of the Kedushas Levi, where the late Kedushas Levi said, and he saw the wagons that Yosef had sent, Yosef hinted to Yaakov that he should not worry about the exile because of all of this is the eventual cause of redemption. As bad always leads to good. A galot comes from the word igul, circle, as the cause of something is always circular. What does this mean? So when we think about it, we realize the wagons which roll from place to place on wheels that are circular are a beautiful representation of the ways of Hashem in His running of the world. He rolls, so to speak, the wheels of nature in order that His glory be revealed through them. This is what the Mishnah means, that every single thing that Hashem created, He only created for His glory. And just as a wagon cannot travel from place to place without a driver whose job is to direct the wagon and bring the passengers to their destination, so too, lahavdil elef havdolos, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the driver of the world. He directs all the actions taking place in this world towards the desired result of the revelation of His glory in this world. And that's the vision that Avraham Avinu had. It said, can there be a beautiful palace without a master? And Hashem peered down and said, I am the master of the world. With this we can explain the holy Kabbalist of Agali Amukos, who says, it is known that when Mashiach comes, the chariot will be complete. The perfect chariot, the Merkava Shlema, has the same gematria numerical value as Avram Yitzchak Yaakov Dovi. Whereas in exile, where the impurity reigns, we have an impure chariot, Merkava Tmeya, which has the same gematria as Baal Tzfon and Kelav Ra. According to our approach, this means that our holy Avos and David HaMelech dedicate their entire lives to publicize there's a God in the world who moves all the circles of the world from the holy chariot, there being no force besides Him. Through these efforts, they became a chariot of holiness themselves, as Hashem ran the world through them and their descendants that accepted the Torah. Is it any wonder, my friends, 25, that when we utter the four-letter name of Hashem, the Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei, we have to have in mind Hayah, Hoveh, V'yeh, that Hashem was, is, and will be, which is the same gematria as Galgal, as wheel. By having this intention, we inculcate within us that Hashem being, that He is Omni, portal, bridges the past, present, and future, omnitemporal, in order to direct everything to that ultimate goal of His revelation and the sanctification of His name. Well, Hashem is running the world. Hayah, Hoveh, V'yeh, past, present, and future. The world continues to revolve. Yavan, Hanukkah is the antithesis of this, where they think that nature runs the world. With this we can appreciate. It is known that the descent of the Jewish people to Egypt and the back-breaking slavery was all a purification process to enable the subsequent receiving of the Torah. As we know that we are being brought down to the core Har Barzel, that exile is an indispensable part of the redemption. So now we can appreciate the Kedushas Levi. Yosef was encouraging his father not to be dispirited over the descent to Egypt. While it was true the Jewish people would have to endure a 210-year exile, this was comparable to the wheels of the wagon that rolled from place to place until they reached their destination. In a similar fashion, Kadosh Baruch Hu was rolling the wheels of the exile process in order to purify his heir to hasten the redemption and the acceptance of the Torah. This is why Yaakov's spirit was revived after he saw the wagons with their wheels. And this is similar to what the Ramchal says in Das Tfunos in 26. In truth, you will see that in actions as well, there is no evil in this world, except in sections of matter before it has reached its completion. There's no thing that has reached its conclusion that is evil. That is because we know that Hashem only does that which is completely good. That which appears lacking in any aspect is only so because it's missing that which will bring it to its conclusion. Eventually it will be completed by some other thing that will make it whole and good. The Ramchal is saying that anytime something appears negative to us, it's because we lack the ability to see the whole picture. According to the current situation, it appears bad. Were we able to see the whole picture, not only the past, but also the future? When Hashem finishes and completes the cycle of this matter, we realize there's no bad in this world. Every action has a purpose, a destination. It's only for the benefit of this purpose. And that, my friends, is what the O of Yisrael brings down. And the idea of what the word emunah is about. Emunah is an expression of raising. like Vayhi Omein et Hadassah, and he, Mordechai, raised Hazarstah. It is through Emun and Hashem that a person draws down the very thing he is believing in from heaven to earth, from potential to action. However, if a person, God forbid, does not have faith that Hashem turns everything to good, then he stops the cycle from being completed. Many are the agonies of the wicked, but as to the one who trusts in Hashem, kindness encircles him. Chesed Shavavenu! For the wicked person who does not trust that Hashem directs everything towards an eventual good actually prevents the salvation of Hashem. The matter gets stuck in the middle of the cycle and ends up being strict judgment. Therefore, many are the agonies of the wicked. However, on the other hand, as for the one who trusts Hashem, kindness encircles him. The word Yisovavenu, encircle, specifically is used because it's his very trust that allows the Kadosh Baruch Hu to complete the cycle. And now we can appreciate again, we should be thinking about the Sivivon, which is the counter to Yavon. It's the being able to spin, it's being able to see an entire picture. So now we understand that the wagons that Yosef sent from the side of holiness, while the wagon that Paro sent was from the side of impurity. Paro represented the side of impurity. Who is Hashem that I should listen to him? Isn't it interesting, my friends, that when Paro runs after Klal Yisrael, and it's parenthetically the story note that Vayhi b'shalach Paro ta'am, when Paro sent out the people, that was the problem. He was malava them. He escorted them, and that's why he was connected to them, and they had to break away from that connection, end of parentheses. Egypt pursued and came after them, every horse of Paro's chariots and his horsemen into the midst of the sea. That means that Paro and his army galvanized all their chariots of impurity in order to strengthen their false approach to the cycles of the world. However, Hashem struck them down, what does it say, by the Shira, by the wheels of their chariots? Vayasar et ofen merkavotav. HaKadosh Baruch Hu specifically struck at the wheels of their chariot of impurity to show the Egyptian approaches to the cycle of world was not worth anything. This is what is being found here so powerfully. Paro is sending chariots of impurity. Yosef HaTzadik is sending chariots of purity. It is the idea that Yosef HaTzadik is telling his father, don't worry. Don't worry about Paro. Don't worry about the side of impurity. I know we're going into Golos and Sakura Barzel. In the end, those chariots are going to be destroyed by their very wheels. Recognize that there is a larger process here. Recognize that sometimes we have to go down, Yerida, Litzarech, Aliyah. The downward is only to get us to the higher upward. The Chasam Sofer notes, it's so fascinating. A Golos is really two words. Ayin Galut, exile among the 70 nations. Yosef HaTzadik intending to strengthen his descendants in all of their future exiles among the different nations to always remember the wagons he sent Yaakov to carry him down into the exile. We must never forget that the very wagons that Hashem directed downwards into the exile will come full circle when the wheels are directed back upwards at the time of a redemption. Now, Rabosai, let's take this one step deeper before we go back to the Shvili Pinchas. The Torah for Parsha Vayigash. So this week's Parsha is in Navi Yecheskel. And he says, Vasiti otam legoy achad. I will make, it's a vision of the future, them one nation. And that's referring to Yehuda and Yosef. Velo yechatsu l'shtei mamlachot. Oh, they won't be divided into two anymore. They'll be one. What is one? What is two? Symbolically understands that the Shoresh Habriya, the way Hashem set up this world, is that the world is divided into two, which is Or and Choshech, light and darkness, opposites. Yitarona Or mina Choshech, and the only way to be able to really appreciate light is through darkness. And that's the two mamlachot, the two kingdoms we have in this world, that we have to go through sorrows, we have to go through challenges, in order to become able to come out on the other side with a deeper connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And he says, in the future, we're not going to have these two, this distinction of good and bad, of light and darkness. We're going to be able to see only the wholeness of this. But the Eitz Bisfarim Hakadoshim Shechol Yudim LaTeglovo Harei B'Pnim Yitzarei Kol Yudim LaZeh Bolam HaZeh. Our challenge is in our world, not to see the stira, not to see the contradiction, to try to tap into it, whatever little inkling we can, that there's no contradiction between darkness and light, between pain and pleasure. Everything is to get us to the ultimate good. The only challenge is that Hashem has ordained in this world that the only way we can appreciate salvation or come to salvation is through going through that process of challenge. And that's why our challenge in this world is to try to get a sense or to know, to be maiming, that really the Surah and the Yeshua Chad Inun, that they're really one. And this, he says in 34 so beautifully, is a representation of Yosef and Yehuda. Yosef represents Golos. Yosef represents the darkness. Yosef goes down into the Egypt to be able to find Hashem. Yosef is Mekadeshim Shemayim. He sanctifies God's name in private. Yehuda is one who has the Yudke Vavke in his name. He's the one who sanctifies God's name in public. Yosef represents the Golos aspect, the exile, the darkness aspect. Yehuda represents the Geula aspect, the redemption aspect. In our world, Yosef and Yehuda cannot live together. They are two machanot, they are two kingdoms, darkness and light. The darkness, vayera vahibokya. First we have darkness in order to be able to get to the light. In the future, says Yechezkel Anavi, Yehuda and Yosef are going to come together. And they're going to be one. And Yehuda's going to rule. It's not just about the tribes. It's about a philosophy. In the future, we're able to see that there's only one tchum, there's only one aspect, and that's revelation of godliness, where we're able to see in the future, everyone will be able to say the bracha of a tovu meitiv. That's what is going on here. That when Yehuda is being sent down to Yosef, it's an understanding that Yaakov Avinu understands on this deeper level, that yes, we have a golos process, but I need to have Yehuda in place, even and specifically before Golos, to understand that in Golos is Geula. In the time of challenge, you need to be able to have Yehuda in place, the revelation in place. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to go through and survive the Golos. You need to be able to have that spark of Yehuda wherever you are, and in the future, be able to live a Yehuda existence. Rabosai, this leads us to our final point. Shila Pinchas says, we see clearly that when we encounter what appears to be a negative occurrence, it's incumbent upon us to believe with complete faith that all that Hashem does for the best. We have to believe the Yehuda. We have to believe the goodness, the Geula. We must realize this action is not an end into itself. We must let it roll and roll until it completes its cycle, at which point we'll understood what Hashem was planning from the beginning. Now, at this point, one might ask, if it's true that Hashem intends to roll a reaction towards an eventual positive outcome, why is it necessary for us to state our belief that everything Hashem does is for the good? Won't it reach this positive outcome whether we believe it or not? Why do we need to have this emunah? Why is it incumbent for whatever happens to say this is good? Gamzu l'tova, when we're in the depths of real challenge, to be able to say, Hashem, I know this is good. If ultimately it is going to be good, why do I need to say it? And the answer is that specifically the person's belief and trust that Hashem will spin this action toward a positive conclusion, which causes him to do so. As we saw, Chesed Yitzavavenu. We have to have the emunah, the faith that this is good, and that will bring it full circle. Yaakov Avinu heard Yosef's message of the agolos, of the rolling circle, but he had to bring Yehuda down there. He had to set up the Yehuda, the belief that there is Lahara Lefanav, literally to teach him, to teach us, that when you go down to Golos, you have to have Yehuda in front of you. You have to have the Geula in front of you. You have to see that all of this will ultimately be for the good. Rabosai, this is hinted at in something we dive in every single day, a number of times a day. Take this idea home with you, put it into your heart, put it into your sitter, and share it with others. We know The Gemara in Brachos tells us, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, 36, we know Ashrei, Kapitul Kuf Mem He, chapter 145, has all the letters of the alphabet except for the letter Nun. And the answer is, Mipnei Sheish Ba'amavotam Shal Sonei Yisrael, because it talks about Nun as the tefillah, to fall. We don't want to talk about us falling, as the Pasuk said. Nafla Loto Seif Kum, but to Lot Yisrael, we fall, we won't be able to get up. Amar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, Afilu Hachi, nevertheless, he says, Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, Chazar David V'samcham B'ruach HaKodesh Shenem, Ar Samech Hashem L'chol Nofrim. Don't think Nun got completely left out. The next letter is Samech. Samech says, Samech Hashem L'chol Nofrim. Hashem holds, he supports all those who fall, and the Nun is found there. What's going on here? The Nun represents Nefila, represents falling. The letter Samech represents Smicha, represents being able to get up. As B'nai Sefer points out, that's the word Nes, miracle, because this is to teach you that when we are Nun, falling, Hashem will come and give us the letter Samech to pick us up. And indeed, that's what the miracle does, hence the word Nes. But based on the Kedushas Levim 38, we can understand this on a much more deeper level. If you take a look at the letter Nun, and it's on in the bracket of 38 by the asterisk, so Nun is a half a circle. And Nun Suras Chatzigul Lumat O Samech Shi Suradigul Shalem. You take a look at a Samech, it's a full circle. Ulfi Hamur Beyorhu Kiot Nun Shi Besura Chitzigul Rumezal Masa Biltika Mur Shadayim Lom Nishram Sivivo. When a person is in a Nefila state, in a fallen state, that is represented by a Nun. A half a circle. I've fallen. The challenge that we have to have is, I can't stay in that fallen state. We don't have a Nun in Ashrei. The Nun has to be another Nun to come to it. And that would make the letter Samech. I have to believe that even though I have fallen, I am now going to get up. Even though I'm in a Yosef and the Agolos is coming down to Mitzrayim, there's a Yehuda, and I believe that there's going to be redemption. When a person is maming b'amun ha'shlema, that Rish Baruch Hu is going to be misaved kol ha'sibo, he's going to turn around all the events, ligmur sivu ma'aseh zeh l'tova, to have everything turn for the good. This emunah, this faith, brings everything for the good. And then we have the letter Samech. And we have Somech Hashem l'chol ha'noflim, Hashem yurke vavke. Daika Shaya Hove Vye Galu Lufanab. It was clear in front of him. Havaya, Yudke Vovke, same Gematrias Galgal, that Hashem is the one who is in charge of the wheels of turning everything back to the top. Rabosai, this is the message that the Parsha Vayigash Elav Yehuda is teaching us. That in the Parsha of the revelation of Yosef, the Parsha of going down to Egypt, the Parsha of that there's no break between Vayigash and Vayichi because the eyes of the Jewish people have been closed, they've entered into Golos. In this whole Parsha of Golos, we begin Vayigash Elav Yehuda. You can't just look at a half a circle at a Nun. You have to be able to understand that there's another half of a circle. There's a Yehuda, Yudke Vavke, which is in Yehuda's name, that Hashem is there to hold us up. That's the message that Yaakov Avinu understood from Yosef. We're going down to Egypt. Hashem is sending us down, but don't lose hope. And if you don't lose hope, we're going to come out. Yaakov Avinu gets the message. He sends Yehuda down. He gets his priorities in order. And ultimately, we are able to come out of Egypt a much stronger people. And in our own lives, whatever we are going through, whatever challenges we're going through, whatever difficulties we're going through, and we feel like we're in a fallen state, we have to say to ourselves, Gamzu Latova, this is all for the good. That Hashem is Mesabed Sibo, that Hashem turns everything around. And to the extent that I am able to bring the Amunah, the faith and belief that Hashem is here, and that He is directing everything, to that extent, I'm adding another Nun. I'm closing the circle. Somech Hashem, L'chol Hanoflim. Hashem, Yudke Vavke, the Galgal, is the one who is helping me up and going to allow me to see, already in my time, that everything is indeed for the good.